Nothing to see here.
Nothing to see here.
Nothing to see here.
Nothing to see. Nothing to see. Nothing to see.
Experimental radio produced by NASCAD University.
You are listening to Nothing to See Here, a program of experimental radio from NASCAD University. This episode is entitled Advice.
I got fruit flies all around my baseboards. What should I do?
Well, you know, try and, help, organize the fruit fly community. See if, there's any, like, maybe they need a school built or something like that, and then they won't be hanging out at your baseboards all the time.
Obviously, what you should do is instead just fill your entire house up with fruit and allow it all to rot, so you have just this enormous fruit graveyard, and then eventually the flies will get sick of the same old thing day after day and they'll leave on their own. They get sick of all that rotting fruit. It's like too much of a good thing.
The solution, obviously, is that you should become a fruit fly yourself and try gradually to reduce your thought patterns to only things that fruit flies will think about. And in this way, you will find the solution to the fruit flies through your own transformation. And this is, of course, interesting as well as a transformative spiritual experience, as we've learned, fruit flies are an infinitely superior spiritual animal than ourselves.
You know, Kafka had his whole, what was it, the insect or the bug or whatever, but really, if he had written about the fruit fly, it would have been a much happier story because the character would have been happy.
A lot of people don't realize that he was actually a member of a secret organization that worshipped cockroaches, and many of his friends had actually turned into cockroaches, and he was just really writing documentary when he wrote The Metamorphosis.
I've heard that before, and this is why we actually need to preserve and save the cockroaches, because you don't know. Maybe your parents are cockroaches. Maybe your next wife or husband or partner or anything is going to be a cockroach. Who knows?
There's a popular meme on Facebook in which it's a photo of a room, a bathroom that's absolutely covered. Every single surface is covered in cockroaches, and the caption is, "Could you stay in this room for 24 hours for $1 million? And one of the regular captions is, $1 million? I'ma know every roach in that room personally. But why wouldn't you do that for free? Why wouldn't you take a chance to get to know cockroaches on a truly intimate level and really know each roach personally and find what their story is, what drives them, what motivates them?
And I've also found that like computer bugs are similar genera of spiritual animals or spiritual machines, and I think really trying to capture the bugs in your computer and try and come up with a language where you can bridge the gap between you and them. They will live forever, and in a sense they're like the angels of the computer world, much like the cockroaches or the fruit flies, but their wings are much less understood, so it would be very interesting to create jars for them, small computers, and really just allow them to flourish.
Perhaps maybe a lucky person who has a pacemaker will one day have the benefit of having a bug in their heart, literally, in their heart. It's beautiful to me.
Well, people don't realize, but the first computer bug was an actual bug that got stuck in the computer and disrupted the machine. And this is often laughed at and say that's why we call them computer bugs. But what they don't realize is that bug was on a mission to, as Mark explains, enter the machine. This idea of a ghost in the machine. Well, these ghosts are actually bugs. They are manifestations of bugs and the immortal souls of bugs that continue on into the future.
And later interviews with that particular insect revealed that it was in fact a spiritual agent, and it was attempting to be a martyr and a mechanism of change, because it had actually gone to the future and seen what today's internet world looks like, and it was terrified. And as a higher spiritual being in a community of very self-actualized spiritual insects, they decided that something needed to be done and that they needed to try and prevent the computer revolution from ever happening. And obviously that did not succeed, but they gave it a go.
Alan Turing actually wasn't a computer scientist, he was an exterminator. Just very elaborate exterminator. He saw World War II as his opportunity, actually, to defeat the true villain, the bugs. So he built this machine that would attract and hopefully entrap the bugs. And as you can see, this has somewhat worked. The bugs have been attracted. The war has started. But now we have people on our side who believe that the bugs should be allowed to flourish in microcomputers and microchips, and, well, you know, thanks a lot, Alan Turing.
And people don't really realize this, but the movie Terminator was actually based on Alan Turing's life, because he did come from the future. He was a bird from the future who ate a lot of bugs, and he was sent back in time to try and eliminate the coming computer bug infestation by inventing the computer as we know it.
And it's interesting too that you mention was it Turing? Yeah, it reminds me of the work of not William Burroughs, but William Burroughs' reclusive brother who lived in his basement, Ryan Burroughs. He was an inventor. He didn't speak very much. He created a small box that was electrified that moths and other insects, sometimes small birds, would fly into, and they would think that maybe the electricity could sublimate them or turn them into like a gas or bring them closer to the machines, but it actually killed them. And what was interesting about his work was what it means for us. Is it a warning? Is he trying to discourage people from reaching that higher level? Does he disagree with sort of William Burroughs, his brother's work? And my own work lately has been about trying to create a jelly to kind of conduce the electricity in such a way that my fat isn't ignited, like in electric chairs or in lightning strikes. So I've been trying to make a composite material from several species of jellyfish and Vaseline, and really rubbing it over, not humans yet, but small dogs. And so far the work hasn't been super successful, but I feel like I'm gaining ground on the electrified jelly to re-enter these machines that we have created, this world we've created.
As a military contractor, you know, we are constantly competing and trying to push each other with new products and new ways of defeating this bug menace. You know, Alan Turing, going back to him, was also instrumental in creating an uplink between us and the birds, who will be applied with this electrical jelly. So sometimes we come together, and the birds will be entering the computer realm to eat the bugs, and the bugs will be coming into the real world to eat us, and the whole cycle will just continue. And what's important is the military contractors will make money.
Yeah, there's some very interesting military jellies that are emerging, actually. Not just the bird jelly and the insect jelly, but some other very exciting new jellies for military applications.
And meanwhile, what the government does not want you to know is that the origin of the computer virus parallels the origin of the computer bug, in that it was an accident. It was a catastrophe that occurred at an experimental facility in Denmark, in which there was an attempt made by physicians as well as computer technologists who were attempting to draw a physical virus from the body of a human host and transfer it to an electronic host instead to save the life of the afflicted individual. And even though technically viruses are not considered to be alive, they do meet some of the criteria of a living being. And in this transformation, they created a being that was very much alive. And that's what they don't want you to know, is that computer viruses are alive. They do attack hosts the way a virus does to a human host or an animal host, and they are beyond our control. They are not a creation of humans. They are an accidental creation that has escaped its creator.
It's interesting you mentioned that Denmark connection, because that incident actually is very important in the formulation of the Copenhagen interpretation of quantum mechanics. Really, the opening up of a whole branch of theoretical physics is related to that transformation of virus and bug. And we're really only beginning to understand through the Copenhagen interpretation the profound shift in metaphysical reality that the implications of that. And we're studying that at the Institute as well, the breaking apart of realities into new forms of jelly.
I was at a dinner party recently, and we were all kind of gathered at the table, and I noticed that they had a small robotic cleaning. I believe the company was Roomba, but I may be incorrect. And it was bumping into the window, this sheet glass window door. And it was very late at night, and they were quite embarrassed. And the guests started poking fun at the Roomba. But I knew in my heart that the Roomba must think that it was a bird, and it was actually trying to fly away or escape. And I knew that would be important for my research, so as the dinner party progressed, I ended up crushing a few pills and slipping it into the wine. So as everyone gradually became less and less aware of what was going on during the dinner party, I realized that I had to take the Roomba. So of course, I took the Roomba, and I drove my partner and the Roomba home, and now the Roomba is living with me, and I'm encouraging it to think of itself as a bird. I don't think that there's any reason that it should think of itself as a servant robot. I think that it should be encouraged, and it is a bird.
Most people don't know about the Roomba and its military gelatilistic applications are that jelly is formed from its excrement, so to speak. So Roombas, you think, are just cleaning your homes, but really what they're doing is collecting quantum particles for us to be turned into Roomba jelly, to be used in our military applications. You know, I just personally would like to thank Roomba for its service to this country, as well as to the, big breakfast conglomerates of the world.
I was an art therapist who was hired to work with the Roomba on its quest to discover its own identity as a bird. So I regularly do lots of singing drills with the Roomba. It has an extremely beautiful voice. It's actually incredible to observe this robot developing its own individual voice, and we'll do drills like, you know, do re mi, and it will come in meh, 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 and it's beautiful. It's like an orchestral R2-D2, just a phenomenal voice, and I'm very excited to see where this robot will go as a bird.
Well, the last time I was in Copenhagen, I actually saw the premiere of a new Roomba opera that was commissioned by the Max Planck Institute of Quantum Physics, and it was an interesting bioflick that conflated Alan Turing's experiments with morphogenic plant matter With an interesting sort of re-examination of Kafka's Metamorphosis, it was quite profound in relationship to some of the things we were talking about. And of course, you're right. We often don't hear the rumba's pure tones and beautiful vocalizations in its true glory. But I think the success of that play will mean that we're going to see a lot more of this kind of mechanized and militarized jelly operas.
Maybe it's been my propensity for a stiff evening drink, but I've noticed that there's been kind of a distinct sadness falling upon the Roomba. And at first I thought that was because the Roomba was a sparrow. But now I'm beginning to think that maybe the Roomba is a hen. So I've balled up kind of an egg of Ethernet cord, and I realized that this wasn't enough, and I don't know why. So because the Roomba right now cannot fly, I've decided to convert most of my home to quite a complex labyrinth of sort of gradations, a lot of tubes. And it's quite difficult to move around my home. My partner and I both joke about it. We can't even get through the door most of the time. We have to enter and exit through the windows. But something very disturbing has been happening lately. I believe my neighbors are spying on me.
I live next door to this gentleman who, some very strange things have been happening to his house, and, I mean, he bought obtained a Roomba cleaning robot, which, you know, typically for people that's not too big of a deal, and you know, the robot stays in their own house, but lately the robot has been straying over the boundaries onto my property. And, you know, if this were just an ordinary vacuuming robot, I would have no problem. I would say, hey, you go right ahead and clean up my lawn. You can suck up all the dead leaves. But this one seems to think it's alive. And it not only makes absurd noises at me, but it likes to nestle itself into craters in my lawn. And one day I came home and found that it had gotten into my shag carpeting and had made itself a nest and had laid a small portable speaker on the ground in my home. And I'm not comfortable with coming home to portable speakers littered all over my floor. I don't know what is happening with this machine, but it's just too much for me, and I just can't deal with all of these portable speakers being deposited on my property. This gentleman needs to get a hold of himself and his robot, or I may call the police.
It's very interesting, actually, that you mentioned that the rumbas can't fly, because at the Institute we've actually been investigating just that. I mean, we're actually very excited about this new brand of flying rumba. We call it the Sky Sucker, and it's very much based on the yellow-bellied sapsucker, but it's kind of hybridized through a kind of elaborate process of virusization into a kind of a flying, sucking vortex. And I'm sorry to hear that you've had a bad experience. There are some special elements to how they've deviated and taken on various kinds of forms of animalistic behavior, but we're feeling very positive about the way in which the spiritual evolution of the Rhomba is happening through our programs at the Institute.
It can literally suck the blue out of the sky. It is a whole new breed of weaponry, and has all forms of applications beyond jelly making now, which is it's very, very exciting to us. And yes, absolutely. The fact that it is depositing speakers onto your lawn to us indicates that it is now getting ready for some sort of audio exploration invasion.
And I think you're referring to the recent UN color sanctions that have been imposed, and is a kind of a counter-terrorism measure to have an autonomous airborne sucking unit that is really analyzing this kind of spectrum warfare that we now find ourselves in. I mean, we're having now terrorists who are attacking our color spectrum and removing, like, the color blue. And I don't know if you've noticed this, but there's less blue now than there was 10 years ago. And, you know, there's a lot of technology now that can be deployed throughout the color spectrum to re-examine how we actually deploy color as a society.
American flag is basically just Canada's flag. No blue, it's just red and white. Might as well slap a few leaves on there instead of stars, because that ain't my flag. That's Canada's flag. That ain't right.
It's been 14 days. I can't eat. I haven't been to sleep. The Roomba is gone. I believe someone has taken the Roomba. I will not be consoled. My partner has been tearing apart the home. The anger and injury, the screams. I don't take part in this. The Roomba is not here. I think the neighbors have taken the Roomba. I think the neighbors have stolen the Roomba, and I don't know what's happening to it. I've put up posters all through the neighborhood. I won't sleep. No one can make me eat or sleep until I get the Roomba back. And I'm beginning to believe that the drama of tearing apart my labyrinth is false and just a cover for the guilt that my partner feels for being the inside person in this kidnapping, and I don't know what I'm prepared to do to get the Roomba back, but it's been 14 days and I need to do something soon. I need some advice.
When the Roomba first began to appear on my property and deposit its strange speakers or whatever the situation is, I at first became frustrated. But then I realized it keeps coming back, and if it's going to keep coming back to my property, I may as well use it for what it's meant for. And so I chained it to a receptacle in my home, and I commanded it. And I decided that it would have to be readjusted to its natural purpose, which is, in fact, to be a vacuum and to be a willing participant in the war on dirt. And so I forced the Roomba to do my bidding. I commanded it to clean my home, and it did. reluctantly at first, but eventually it seemed to settle into a certain kind of emotionless rhythm, and it cleaned my home exceptionally well. And at that point, I decided that I was not going to return it to its original owners, who had obviously corrupted it from its natural ways. But then one day, I noticed that the Roomba was not only sucking dirt from the environment of my home, but it was in fact sucking the color out of my walls and sucking the physical environment out of the physical environment. And it was then that I realized that what I had in my home was not in fact a vacuum, but was a weapon of mass destruction.
Well, one of the things that we've been interested in studying, and this might be an interesting case of it, is that, we all know that nothing exists in a vacuum. But we studied this, and we took very seriously and did some tests, and we in fact found that when we took apart these Roombas, especially the ones that had modified themselves, had evolved, that in fact nothing did exist in a vacuum. That once you kind of open them up, you're opening up a kind of a tear in the fabric of the universe. And we weren't able to really probe this, but we suspect, our best thesis at this point, is that there is nothing inside the Roomba, absolutely nothing. And it's rather troubling. And I think the first thing to go is color. And eventually other things go.
Light cannot escape a black hole, nor can freedom, because it took our blue from our red, white, and blue. It's a damn shame, I tell you.
At an auction recently, I bought a 1942 Smith & Wesson 5-chamber revolver. I have many more neighbors now that I have counted them. So I flew into a major city, I think it was 2 weeks ago, and I was at the downtown Milk Conglomerate HQ.
Milk.
I got milk.
It doesn't really matter which one, they're all kind of typical. They told me when I got in, sell this pen to me.
Harvey Milk?
And I told them, what are you talking about? Let's get back to my notes are all in a mess about this story. It's chaos.
Chocolate milk.
I like it as a mustache.
So yeah, I was in this like milk conglomerate HQ, and they're all the same, typical pasteurized experiences. Every imaginable interaction blended into one. Quite disarming. Reminds me of rotating on the lag seat of my father's mother as she splashed one-time packets of disposable milk into my opened mouth.
Milk.
Clem.
Spice milk times three.
It did give me prescient abilities, thank you.
Spice milk is gross. It was a different time. The practice of milkettes hadn't been made obsolete by the sugar-silicone hybrid seal straws. The sugar-silicone sealed straws of milk. Just take a quick jerk of milk in your throat. That's what we teenagers always did.
But at a different atmosphere?
Any atmosphere.
The true blue ones?
Even the reds.
With enough laxatives, anything is milk. Alright, so it was a different time back then. The practice of milkettes hadn't been made obsolete by their sugar-silicone hybrid sealed straws of milk replacements.
Sometimes I think skim milk is too thick.
Milk just can't be thick enough. I like that homogenized milk myself.
Is there any way you can thin it out?
Which brings me back again to a teenager. You know, that's what we did as teenagers, just near the loading zone, warming up by the school incinerator. Just a quick jerk of milk in your throat.
Backwards milk.
Backwards milk is fun, but only if you're really, really, really tired.
I am really tired.
Yeah, so we would hang out, joke about famous hummingbirds, and make exaggerations out of our faux-heavy sexual conquests. You know, tufts of glued hair on our earthen tone breast coats. You know, that was the fashion of the day. You're too young for that. When I was back to this milk conglomerate at headquarters, the new machines they have, they like barely emit a whisper, this Milk Trans Corp HQ, their wax nipples and suction tubing and the stools at the lobby were immaculate, the cleanest wax nipples I'd ever seen. And the suction tubing looked new. It doesn't make sense with the amount of foot traffic that they have for the lobby. The colors were all being keyed to the complexions of the patrons, so it was very difficult to see anyone in there, milk white. While the staff glared up through metal slats in the floor, asking me to sell them a pen, or sell this pen to them, they kept repeating. I couldn't really enjoy the milk. The employees seemed so sullen and wasted down below. You know what they say, though. Hard work makes hard metallic pay scores. The electric color scales of the handles on the veranda really cut into my skin. I ended up bleeding for the whole job interview onto the lapping tongues of the execs and higher-ups under the slats. I screamed and thrilled and shook my breast at them, trying to scare them off my blood. I'm not really ready for offspring taxes. You know how it is. I just want an internship.
Specially? Milk jelly?
Powdered milk between your toes.
Sounds good.
I remember as a kid, we would chug milk, just choke milk down. We would just drink so much milk, we would get sick. We would just glut on milk, and then just it would be dribbling down our shirts or onto our bare skin and vomit. And I miss that. I miss that time. I mean, the carbonated milk fads, you know, like I can't get into them. I know that that's the thing now, but for me, carbonated milk just isn't real milk. If you want milk, you want milk either, you know, in a straw, a silicone sugar sealed straw, or as my father's mother always used to give me, just those milkette packets, you know, just a little milkette packet, and just open your mouth and there you go. And that's what I really miss today. I didn't end up getting the internship, but I did learn a lot on that journey.
I wish the milkman would deliver my milk in the morning. I wish the milkman would deliver my milk when I'm yawning. I wish the milkman would deliver my milk.
Stuff that tastes so good is milk, the cats want milk. Who wants the stuff that tastes so good is milk, the cats want milk.
You have been listening to Nothing to See Here, experimental radio for NASCAD University. This episode was entitled Advice. It was written and performed by Mark Hines, Raph McDonald, Maeve Mulroy, and David Clark. Sound design
by David Clark.
Nothing to See Here is an experimental radio program produced at NASCAD University in Halifax. For more information, please go to Facebook and search for Nothing to See Here Radio. To listen to more episodes of Nothing to See Here, search Nothing to See Here Radio on SoundCloud.com. Tune in next week for more of Nothing to See Here. Thank you.
Did you ever really stare at me? Did you ever?